The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Titans offset the eye to the right. Now going in motion, Tannehill. Direct snap, Henry. He throws in the end zone. Man is wide open. Caught. Touchdown, Titans. The Titans go to the King Cat. And the King has thrown for a big six.
He runs, he catches, and he throws. Derrick Henry yesterday with a touchdown pass. More touchdown passes yesterday than Patrick Mahomes at Derrick Henry, and one of the surprising outcomes of a day with not a lot of great games, but some really surprising outcomes in the two big games of the day. He's Mike Golic. I'm Mike Florio. The show is called PFT Live. Unofficially, it's Mike along with Mike. I'm happy to report no major injuries this morning, either as I got out of bed or got ready or made my way up here or carried my chair back over from my Sunday night position. No fall down, go boom. No issues, no problems. Very happy.
Can I ask you really quickly, since the injuries last week, especially the shower door into the eye, and it looks much better today, did you take any precautions? What was the rehab through the week, and did you take precautions for this morning to make it to your chair, which I'd imagine from where you get up to your chair is, I don't know, 20, 30 feet? Maybe I'm wrong. Yes. Did you take any precautions so you can get there safely?
I have a big rubber pad on the shower door now, so that will never happen again. And thankfully, I've got makeup. Because it was one of those deep, nasty bruises that after 3 or 4 days, you look jaundiced. It's like this yellow, nasty, because it was so deep. And it was purple in the corner of my eye, but it's yellow all over here. So there's still some lingering effects to remind me how stupid I was last Monday. All right. Not that I don't need reminders of that. I have constant reminders of how stupid I am. And Mike Golic. Here's one example of how stupid I am. Actually, I got two examples today of how stupid I am. Let's start with the Chiefs at the Titans. I thought the Chiefs would win. I thought the Chiefs were going to finally find the gas pedal. I thought the Chiefs were going to fix what ailed them. I thought they'd figure out how to beat the Titans just like they did not all that long ago, grand scheme of things, January 2020, when they beat the Titans to go to the Super Bowl. How wrong I was.
Oh, I was completely wrong as well. I think like you, and I think like a lot of people, that Kansas City is going to kind of regain where they were, or at least start that path to get to be one of the better teams in the AFC. Because even when they got down, 27-0 in the first half, we've seen them be down before. I mean, you just mentioned it, you know, one of the games. We've seen that happen, and we've seen them come back. But I think two of the big things of why they can't do that anymore as we start to break this game down is their turnovers. They're what, like at minus 7 or 8 for the year, and I think last year they were at plus 9. So they're losing the ball way more than they're getting the ball. That's number one. Number two, what's the one big revamping they did this year was the offensive line. A lot of revamping on that. And you look at them now already 7 games in, Pat Mahomes has been sacked 14 times. Now, I get he runs around, runs backwards a lot as well, and sometimes bring those on, but you live with them because he makes big plays. But he's been sacked 14 times in 7 games. My quick math says that's twice a game. My quick math also says they play 17 games, so that could work out to 34 sacks a game. Last year, he was only sacked 22 times. And remember, with sacks come hits. Sacks is not the only time the quarterback gets touched. So he's getting hit more. They're turning the ball over more. They're not getting the ball back more, things they used to be able to do, and they're not doing it at the rate. So I lose, and I'm sure a lot of other people watching, and maybe even them, are losing that confidence when they get down. Can they have the ability to come back? Now, again, I say that in their locker room, I'm sure they're not losing the confidence. They think they can still do it because they have, but they're not showing the ability to do that this year.
And I think the reality is, as the Chiefs struggle to recapture that magic that allows them to score 28 points in a quarter, like we've seen in the past, fall behind 24-0 to the Texans in the playoffs in 2020 and end up winning, or 2019 it was, and end up winning the game 51-31. They can't muster that anymore, but their opponents are on guard for it happening. That's what Ryan Tannehill, the Titans quarterback, told me after the game. They're aware constantly of what the Chiefs could potentially do. So there's no letdown. They're up 14-0, no letdown. 17-0, no letdown. 24-0, no letdown. Because they're aware of how dangerous the Chiefs are, even though the Chiefs haven't been able to do it lately. That recent history of the Chiefs having that magic is keeping teams on top of them. They get on top, they get them under the thumb, and they keep pressing.
Yeah, it's one of the first things coaches will show a team is, hey, if you jump on them, I got a whole lot of film back here that we're going to look at that shows them coming back time after time after time again. So it is literally, because we sometimes you don't see it and you get aggravated when you watch it, when a team's up big, to put your foot on the throat of your opponent, something you need to do to end it, you know, and don't let them come back. So there are more than a few examples of Kansas City doing that, that you're right. Coaches can show their players and say, okay, this is what they do. We can't let them do it. And let's be honest, it's not like Tennessee had this monster numbers game yesterday. Derrick Henry didn't even break 100 yards, but he did throw a touchdown pass, which was pretty cool to watch. I was glad to see he didn't jump right away, you know, and waited a little bit before he threw that pass. You see guys jump and get caught in the air. So it wasn't a statistical wow game by Tennessee. They're, quite honestly, they're not that offense, save for Derrick Henry and the running. But certainly they looked good. You know, A.J. Brown has a game. Tannehill is that person everybody wants to kind of count out and say, well, they're not going to get there because Ryan Tannehill can't get them there. And again, he doesn't have the gaudy stats, but they sure as hell are doing enough to take care of the Chiefs and then take care of the Bills before that. That's all you got to do. The bottom line, baby, is win, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Before I give proper praise to the Titans for what they've accomplished this year, let's take a closer look and let's have a listen to what the Chiefs had to say in the aftermath of yesterday's loss that dropped them to 3-4 when you look at their schedule, and we will. It's going to be a tough road to the postseason. Here's Patrick Mahomes on the struggles of the two-time defending AFC champions.
It's been kind of rainbows and flowers and awesome for these last few years, but whenever you want to build something substantial and you want to build something great, you're going to go through parts like this. And I mean, people keep saying it's still early in the year. I mean, we can still go get whatever we want, but it's going to take us getting better every single day. Because if you get better every single day and play each game play by play, I think we have the talent in this locker room that we can make it happen.
I don't disagree with the sentiment, but we've yet to see the execution. I talked to Mahomes when they beat the Eagles, and I heard a lot of the similar things, and we have to be patient, and the defenses are taking away our deep stuff, and we have to chew it up. When your defense is getting shredded, it's kind of hard to get into that rhythm and have that confidence that the offense is able to get it done when you're chasing a team that scored 7, 14, 17, 24, And I just think that Mike, they just, they'll never admit it. No professional athlete is ever going to admit that he or she has lost some confidence, but I just feel like they've lost confidence. They're never going to say it at the podium,
no.
But I can just feel it.
Well, I mean, because Mike, they've done it, and they have the thought process that they can do it again. You know, it's one of these math things where you say there's still time left. Okay, we played 7 games. We have 10 more. But the thing they look at is the fact that they've only had 1 division game. They lost it, obviously. You know, they're 0-1 in the division, but they still have just about all their division games left. So that's how, you know, the first step of getting into the playoffs, have the ability to win the division, and you're in no matter what. You don't have to wonder about a wild card spot. So that, to them, is the goal, is fix things along the way, peak at the right time, but we still have that chance to win the division. You said we'll look at the schedule and the teams they have, like a Dallas and a Green Bay. There's tough teams there, but they'll concentrate now, because normally we'd see them kind of running away with it all, saying, you know, is the AFC title game going to go through Kansas City? They're one of the best. They're the best team in the AFC. Well, they're not right now. So their goal is going to be take care of business in our division, try and lock up that spot in our division, and they have the confidence they can do it, like you said, and being in those locker rooms, you do, because you've done it before. But there is that also kind of that look and that feeling like, yeah, we've done it, but we're not doing it now, and it's not like you can just flip a switch and it's going to happen. Sometimes it's a year where the turnovers get you, and it's getting them this year. And as I mentioned before, there's more pressure on Mahomes. There's some different things happening that they need to overcome to get to where they want to go.
Yeah, and the challenge when it comes to winning the division, you don't have 1-5-2 team in front of you. You have a 5-2 team and a 4-2 team in front of you. The Chargers were off this weekend, and you've got 4 losses. You got twice the losses as the Raiders and the Chargers, and you have to try to catch them. You mentioned the turnovers. Let's have a listen to Chiefs head coach Andy Reid and Mahomes. Oh, we don't have the Mahomes turnovers. Well, I'll tell you this. There was an interception. He put the ball on the ground twice, and one of the fumbles was recovered by the Tennessee Titans. And also, Mahomes took a wicked hit. And look, he cleared the concussion protocol, and I don't know how, but he did. He's got a neck injury, but not a concussion. And he sure looked like, you know, almost like Davante Adams a few weeks back, where it sure looked like he was concussed and they cleared him and let him back in the game. Now, Mahomes didn't return because of that neck injury. Just got snapped back with a knee coming full enough speed. It was a thigh to the head. They got a game next Monday night against the Giants, and every indication is he'll be good to go. But I don't know how he cleared concussion protocol, but again, that's for the neurologist to decide. And he's taken too many hits. Mike, you mentioned that earlier. You take the sacks, you take the hits. And one thing about Mahomes that I can't help but wonder, the toe surgery that he had last year, 3 days after the Super Bowl, after he'd been running around all year and the injury flared up really badly in the playoffs, I can't help but wonder whether or not that just takes – it just took enough, you know, because it always felt like he was right on the edge. And that was part of the mystique. He's running around, hair on fire, and he makes that play at the last second. And I can't help but wonder – whether or not just that tiny little extra that he used to have is gone now. And that's how fine of a line it was between touchdown and disaster.
You know, and we're seeing more quarterbacks in today's game be able to run, whether it's escape the pocket to make a play down the field or run and be a dangerous runner. And he certainly can. We know who, you know, the two biggest are in Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray. But one thing we've always said that came from the old school, but you had to kind of adjust it to the new school, is you don't see a lot of longevity in quarterbacks that run around like that, because eventually they get an injury. And if it's not a major injury, what it is, Mike, is an accumulation of things that over time, you know, it's a concussion, it's a neck, it's a toe. You know, then what's next? You know, guys that have escaped it, they're early in their career, are Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray. You keep wondering, is something going to get nicked on them that's going to accumulate over time? Well, they're still young players and they're fantastic players. So yeah, that has to go into the equation. Now, all these guys I'm talking about, especially Mahomes, can stand in the pocket and whip the ball. But that's just part of their greatness. The other part, and that used to be the standard in the NFL, you know, the Tom Brady, the Peyton Manning, you know, just stand right in that pocket and throw the ball, you know, not have to run or do anything with your legs. Well, we know that part of it has changed, so the accumulation of injuries over time can be there. I didn't even, all honesty, Mike, I saw the hit. I thought neck first, because the way he got bent back, I thought, oh, man, that looked ugly. But then they showed him on the ground, and he kind of had that, you know, off in the distance look. And then, you know, he had kind of not as bad as Daniel Jones was, you know, for the Giants. But he wasn't very steady when he stood up, and I thought, oh, wow, you know, he took it to the you know, like a concussion as well. I really thought it was in his neck, and I wonder how much his neck is going to be sore and stiff from that. The protocol, you're right. We have no idea what goes on, what they're doing. We know the tests they're supposed to be taking and passing, but at that point, there was no sense in putting him back at the game. And now you just wait and see how he recovers during the week. But what I thought was a neck, and I'm sure is partly a neck, when they were taking him off the field, I was like, oh, wow, okay. Yeah, he got one stung to the head as well.
I'm just having a hard time remembering a guy who came in and had this charmed life in the NFL at the quarterback position for 3 years. It wasn't a flash in the pan. It was three seasons of dominance, of creating an early career legacy that we assumed would continue into his mid-30s, late-30s, who knows? Everybody wants to play till they're 45 now, like Tom Brady. To have it evaporate this quickly is really stunning to me. It's as unprecedented as what we saw the first 3 years of his career, because we never saw anything like him the first 3 years, and now all of a sudden, he's sinking toward ordinary. I hate to say it, but there's so many great quarterbacks in the NFL right now. Peter King listed his top 12 last week, and Mahomes is at 8, and you kind of shrug at it. Yeah, it doesn't look out of line, given where he is right now. And I know that how much help he has around him is part of it, but it always felt like he would overcome that, that he was the rising tide that lifted all boats, and something's happened here. And we'll see if they can get it back, because here's where they'll be dangerous, Mike. We mentioned the schedule. If they thread the needle and get in as a 6 seed or the 7 seed, I think you get them into single elimination in January. That's when they get reinvigorated. That's when maybe they show, maybe. But I think they could be very dangerous to some teams in January if they can get in. But that's not a small if right now.
No, listen, I completely agree. I mean, even when they lose, we normally see them score a lot of points. They just get outscored at a higher level. To put up just 3 points, you know, that's a real head scratcher. But I agree with you. If they find a way to get in, again, it doesn't matter what your record is. This isn't college ball where you're getting ranked by your record. You just get in and you got a shot. So that's going to be, again, their thought process, either by we still have a lot of games left in the division to get in there, or try and get a wild card. That has to be their thought. It obviously does not look good. They're not playing like they're going to be a playoff team by any stretch of the imagination. And again, as we take a look at that schedule, they obviously have the division games, but as I mentioned, you know, you have the Cowboys on there, you have the Packers on there, you know, you got some tough teams, the Bengals, who just took care of Baltimore on there. It's a hard schedule to go through in the way they're playing right now, and we were impressed by them, Mike, or I know I was, that they were signing their other big pieces as well. We were like, okay, this is a young team. They're keeping their big pieces together. They're giving them money, you know, so you're like, wow, what kind of a run could this be? Then I was a little surprised. I mean, basically a complete revamping of the offensive line. I think that was what this year in the NFL get known for, because a handful of teams or more did that and revamped their offensive lines. And some of them, you know, you paid the price on that. And here is one where Mahomes is getting hit more than he has in his career. So, you know, that's a part of it you have to look at. It's the unsexy part of the offensive line in front of you, but it could be one of the biggest main cogs, you know, that you have on a team. We're all starry-eyed for the big-time wide receiver, the big-time tight end, the big-time quarterback, but you got to have a line where you can run and where you can quarterback can be protected, and that's an area that's hurting them a little bit this year.
I think one of the things they have to accept to a man in the locker room is that 2018, 2019, 2020 are dead and gone, and this is the hand they're dealt now. They need to make chicken salad now and forget about what they've accomplished The problem is their opponents are not going to forget about what they've accomplished in the recent past because they keep waiting. They keep waiting for Rocky to get his second wind. And Rocky still could. And we look at that schedule. We got some tough ones coming up. There. If they lose to the Giants on Monday night and fall to 3-5, I don't want to say they're done because, again, I'm not going to say any team's done with that many games left. With 9 games left, who knows what will happen. But the next 4 games, and then they have their bye. That's really going to be the key. But, you know, we were throwing dirt on the Buccaneers last year at their bye. They lost to the Chiefs going into their bye, and then they came out of it and didn't lose another game. They went 8-0 and won the Super Bowl. So I'm not ready to say they're done, but they need to tell themselves the past is the past. Remember, we've seen, like, gimmicky things, Mike, where a coach will bury a football, or maybe they need to bury the Lombardi Trophy. I don't know. They need to do something to mentally forget about the last 3 years and focus on right now.
Yeah, and that is tough because they've had so much success. So the natural thought process is, okay, it's not going right now, but we know, and that's what they're saying, we know we can regain that. We have, outside of, again, names on the offensive line, we have just about everybody that we need or had when we were doing that. Now, again, their defense is giving up a ton of yards. They are not a good defense at all. But that didn't matter as much when you're scoring in the 30s, you know, and in the plus category of turnovers, and your quarterback's not getting hit as much, you have the ability to do that. But now it's a little more difficult to come back. There's less confidence. I know we all see they're going to still have the confidence because they did it. But, yeah, I don't know what it's going to take. We know coaches have done things like that. I don't know if Andy Reid's the kind of guy that's going to do something like that. That's just going to be the leaders in that locker room, right? I mean, saying, okay, it's not going our way, but we know we're a good team. Somehow, some way, we have to pull this thing out. And they're not doing it right now. And, again, it may be one of those years where it doesn't happen and they'll just have to try and reload and do it again. But you're right. I mean, it's not where you start. It's where you finish. There is plenty of time. Some teams know exactly who are out of it right now. The most aware people are the players in the locker room of what's going on. And teams know that they're done. Teams know that they're really good. And then the Chiefs believe that they are really good and they can recapture that. That's always the interesting one is, can you get there? You'll talk yourself into it in the locker room, in the weight room, in the meeting room, and guys are just talking amongst themselves, having lunch. You'll talk yourself into, we can turn it around. But then you get out there for practical application on the field on game day, and you're scratching your head saying, wait a minute, this isn't going how it normally has gone for us. You know, what do we need to do to change this?
And now we give some praise to the Titans, King Henry, and all the other pieces they have in place. In a 6-day span from last Monday to Sunday, they beat the 2 finalists from their conference from last year, the Bills and the Chiefs. Now, both games were at home. They didn't have to go on the road. That was a plus. But still, we saw the Titans get dismantled at home by the Cardinals week 1. And this is also the team that lost to the freaking Jets.
Yep.
Are you kidding me? They lost to the Jets, and they beat the Bills and the Chiefs 6 days apart. It shows you how crazy the NFL can be. And I asked Ryan Tannehill, we were kind of laughing about it when I had him on the phone last night, like, how the hell did you guys lose to the Jets? And he said, hey, if you don't show up and play every week, you can get beaten in the NFL. We did not show up that day. We didn't score enough points. We didn't stop them. We get to the red zone. We don't turn into touchdowns. That's how you lose. It doesn't matter who the opponent is. And I think they learn a valuable lesson from that as they go forward. They got some big games coming up. And, Mike, you know, looking ahead, we got a good Sunday night game on NBC coming up on November 7th. That's just 13 days away. The Titans at the Rams. Ooh, that one gets juicy after what the Titans have been able to do recently. But, you know, they're in the driver's seat now in the division. Maybe in the conference. We'll see what they do going forward. We'll see if they have more of these great games and less of those what-the-hell-happened games. But a fascinating team with weapons on both sides of the ball. There were questions about the defense. But when you hold the Chiefs to 3 points, you've answered a lot of those questions.
Well, you certainly answered them for that week, but it is a week-to-week. Like he said, when you lose to the Jets, you better be ready to go. And this is the NFL. There are pros. That's why I always laugh when I hear people say, oh, the best college team could beat the worst pro team. That's the biggest joke there is. It would be a destruction, you know, by the worst team in the NFL beating the best team in college. It's laughable to have that conversation because these are pros and they can step up and have themselves a game. And that's what happened with the Jets in Tennessee, you know, if they're not ready to go. But it is interesting with Tennessee because, Mike, they seem like a team we always kind of want to count out. You know, oh, their offense isn't big time enough. You know, their defense, or their defense had been struggling without question. So it's almost like, I know I was kind of writing off that division, you know, as a whole. You know, with maybe the Colts, and the Colts get a nice win last night, but they're starting to play better. They get, you know, Quentin Nelson, you know, is back. Carson Wentz has thrown just one interception to 11 touchdowns. They're starting to play well. But it's just like it never kind of computed that team, Tennessee, was going to be one of the top teams, even though we've seen where they've gone at times in the last couple of years, on a running game on Derrick Henry. But the efficiency of Tannehill, I think he had, what, 6 incompletions just yesterday, throws for 270. But again, Derrick Henry doesn't even run for 100 yards, but he does throw for one. But Tannehill is efficient. He's been very efficient this year, but again, not flashy. And that's our expectation, I think, in the NFL, is to be flashy. If you're not on offense, then you better have a really good defense to make up for, to be a decent passing game, a great running game, and a really, really good defense. Well, they don't have a really, really good defense. They did yesterday, you know, and maybe that'll start to roll. We'll see. We see they have the ability to do that because, again, Kansas City's been beaten this year, but they haven't been held to 3 points. So, I mean, you want to talk about a feather in the cap for that defense and what they did. That was incredible. But, yeah, Tennessee, and it's a shame, and it's my fault, and certainly the fault of those that are kind of count them out, to say their game is working. Their game can still obviously work in the NFL, and obviously time will tell.
Yeah, first time in 9 years they've been held to 3 points with Coach Reed there. That is not an offense that gets held down that way, either with Patrick Mahomes or Alex Smith before him. So impressive performance by the defense, but you're right. They got to show up every week. They got to build on it every week, and hey, they got the Colts this weekend. They can't be peeking past them to that showdown that just suddenly is like, oh, my God, Titans-Rams. Take care of business 1 week at a time, and they've learned the hard way what happens if you don't take care of business 1 week at a time. Another team that is taking care of business 1 week at a time and had its signature victory on Sunday, the Cincinnati Bengals, going into Baltimore, a place where they lost, coincidentally, 27-3 last year, early in Joe Burrow's career, about a month or so before he had the serious knee injury. This time around, the Ravens, who seem to be, Mike, slipping into domination mode. They win those close games. They get a boost. They take care of the Chargers. You made the great point last week about how Justin Herbert was confused. The Ravens changing everything up. They saw stuff they'd never seen on film. The Bengals out-ravened the Ravens yesterday because they went into Baltimore and they confused and confounded them. And it I look at 41-17, it's like, no, 17-14. They flipped that around. It's, no, the Ravens won. No, this doesn't happen. It happened. We're so used to the Bengals being the Bungles or whatever other derisive name you want to use for them. It's like, just like it's a hard time computing that the Titans are among the elite, like our brains don't want to accept Bengals-Browns as a couple of the best teams in the conference. But the Bengals right now, 5-2, first place in that division. Who would have thought they'd be in first place in that division ever this season?
Oh, no, without question. And a few weeks ago, I did their Thursday night game with Jacksonville before the, you know, the infamous Urban Meyer situation. But Jacksonville was up 14-0 at halftime at that game in Cincinnati. And the Cincinnati fans were booing this Bengal team, which had been playing well early in the year, you know, off the field. And I'm up there thinking, is this the same old Bengals? They start to show a flash, and then now they're going to get thumped by a team that hasn't won a game in Jacksonville. And Cincinnati came out, and they had 4 possessions in the second half. They scored on every possession, including a game-winning field goal. And I thought, okay, you know, that's a confidence level there of being down and coming back. Cincinnati Bengal teams wouldn't do that. They would find a way to blow it or find a way to have a lead and lose it or be at a deficit and not be able to come back. And that was the night I was like, okay, I know it was Jacksonville. You know, I'm not putting too much into it, but it was more about Cincinnati being able to come back and what they're building. You know, what they have is some young guys who don't care about the past, Mike. They don't care. You know, you sit there and Bengal fans can, you know, chapter and verse about how bad their teams have been and trying to build the teams and how bad it's been. But these young players, they don't care. They weren't there. Hell, they weren't even born when a lot of it was going on. You know, so the Joe Burrows and Jamar Chases of the world are like, you know, this is a new era, gang. We got a great, you know, young team here. Let's build on it with a young coach as well. So who don't care at all about the past and are building it now. So they're a fun team to watch. And Burrow and Chase, oh my gosh, I mean, picking up right where they left off, you know, from their national championship year in LSU. They are a lot of fun to watch.
You know, I had a choice to make last night between Jamar Chase and CJ Uzomah to speak to after the game. And I had spoken to Chase already this year, and he's having a phenomenal season. He may be on track to be the NFL's Offensive Rookie of the Year. But Uzomah's been there since 2015. He's been through some crap. He was there for the low water mark that allowed them to get Joe Burrow. So I wanted to hear from him, and he told me that he was feeling emotional on the sideline. And the team is so tight-knit, and they're rising together, and they're fighting through adversity, and they're discovering who they are, and he is amazed by what Burrow is. Joe Burrow is just incredible. I mean, it's hard to stand out the way he did at LSU when you've got so many great quarterbacks in the NFL. But he's starting to, and I think people are starting to notice. And now we see how they deal with the mantle of expectations, right? That once people start overlooking you, do you take it to the next level or do you start to coast? I think the Bengals are going to not get complacent, and they're going to keep going, and they get fueled by what they did yesterday, and they believe in themselves even more.
You know, and we keep talking about, obviously, the young stars on offense, which we should because they're doing so well. Oh, by the way, this is a top 10 defense. Statistically, they're a top 10 defense. They're holding teams to, I think, about 94 yards rushing a game, and in the key stat, while they're scoring just under 28 points a game, they're only giving up a little over 18 points. You know, the bottom line is the final score. And their defense is holding teams in the teens while being especially really good against the run. So it's not just about the stars on offense. You know, it's about an improving defense as well. This is definitely a different Cincinnati team of what they're building. That's the beauty of this, Mike, is it's not a team that brought in like aging veterans to try and hit it for a year, right? And try and get back and try and be that team for a year and then have to deal with salary cap issues and free agents leaving and trying to get more to fill their spots. This is a team being built, you know, certainly some by free agency, but by the draft and using that as the foundation of, and youth and hanging on to those guys. How many teams do we see drafting top players and then a few years later you start to already roll over on those players? Well, here for the Bengals, this is another chance for them. It looks like they have a solid group that they can build upon, not continue to roll over.
And there was so much debate over whether they should take Penei Sewell or Jamar Chase with that fifth overall pick. And Joe Burrow kind of remained neutral on it. He wasn't stumping for his former college teammate the way that maybe others have, because he understands they need some help protecting him after what happened last year, but they made the right call. Jamar Chase had 201 receiving yards on 8 catches yesterday in that long catch and run, and he's spectacular. Burrow is. The team is looking great. Let's hear from Zach Taylor, the head coach of the Bengals, who entered the season on the hot seat. That seat has cooled off considerably. Here he is on beating the Ravens for the first time since 2018.
It's a different team. You know, you're allowed to build and improve, and you know, we just have a different mentality right now. We endured a lot of things that put us in this position. Make no mistake about that. I told the team, I've given a lot of really tough speeches standing where I just stood in that locker room about great things to come and keep working. And you hope and pray that the team believes in that because the foundation we're building. But this is that moment where they know this is everything we've talked about. We've earned, you know, and we're starting to earn respect. We have a long ways to go. You know, just winning one road game against a divisional opponent, that's what you have to do if you want to compete in this league. We've got a long way to go, but I'm really proud of the collective team effort. I mean, this was a complete game today by all three phases, and that's where we're going to need to come on the road and beat Baltimore.
It really is amazing to consider where they are right now after Joe Burrow has the very, very bad knee injury last November against Washington. No reason to think he was going to be ready to go week one. There was talk about whether or not he felt comfortable. You know, the idea that that left knee's exposed out there when you're in the pocket. And Zach Taylor, the rumors were so rampant about him being out after last season, the team actually issued a statement on Black Monday to say, we're not firing Zach Taylor. I don't remember when that's ever happened. The statement that usually is issued the day after the season ends is, see you later, head coach. And to see what they've done, working through the adversity, incorporating Jamar Chase, who worked through his adversity in the preseason when he couldn't catch anything, unbelievable. And, you know, we'll see if they can keep climbing. They got the Jets coming up, the Browns week 9, Ohio showdown, then a bye week. Not a lot of games that when you look at their schedule, you say, wow. But there are some tests, and we'll see if they can keep it going. But so far, so good. 5-2 in the top of the division.
There are tests, but we still have that in the back of our heads, don't we, Mike? It's the Bengals. And will they find a way to screw it up? You know, and it was such a nice game yesterday, even though Lamar Jackson still ran, I think, 12 times for like 88 yards in this one. I mean, he's still incredible to watch. But what this team did overall, and you heard Zach Taylor talk about the moment. That was the moment. And there's moments within the game. And to me, there was a moment right at the end of the half where the half's running down and they go on a 63-yard drive and they get a field goal as it's getting close to halftime to go up 13-10. That, to me, is one of those moments of, okay, you know, we have a chance here, you know, to go down to make a little bit of a statement here and get some points right before halftime. To me, that was a moment in the game that you don't see out of Cincinnati, where I do think the tide is starting to turn. Now, not to think that they won't have their bad moments. All teams do. But they're having more good moments now than bad moments. And what that does is that builds confidence for them to say, all right, we got a little bit of time left in the half. Let's head down the field. They get themselves a three-point lead going into halftime. And to me, that's, again, one of those kind of eyebrow, like, oh, okay. You know, you don't normally see this out of Cincinnati, because that's what we do. We compare it to what we've seen out of a franchise, and it hasn't been pretty out of them. So when they have those little moments like that, I really take that to heart and say, okay, you know, maybe we're seeing a heck of a shift going on with the Bengals.
It's the mirror image of the Chiefs. With the Bengals, we can't shake their past of stinking.
Right.
And with the Chiefs, we can't shake their past of greatness. And they collide late in the season. And the Chiefs may be very, very desperate when they get together late in the season as the Bengals are trying to nail down whatever it is they're trying to nail down, whether it's the division title, whether it's, God forbid, the one seed. Could you imagine of all the great teams in the AFC entering the season, if the Bengals are just in contention for the one seed, not if they get it, but just in contention, that will be mind-boggling. Now, the Ravens look like they were ready to take control of the conference after the Bills lost last week and the Ravens had that big win over the Chargers, who previously had one loss. They go into their bye week, and they got to pick up some pieces. And, you know, they got to figure out what happened to them yesterday, because like I said, they'd been, as you pointed out last week, very good at confounding the opponents. They got confused yesterday by what the Bengals did. So they got 13 days now in the lab until they play again. They better figure some things out. And I tell you what they also better do. They better get Lamar Jackson paid. You know, if he's too busy representing himself during football season to get something done, here's your break. Spend the next 3 or 4 days getting this guy the contract he deserves, Mike.
Listen, Mike, I could not agree more. Get that thing done. Get it done. Put it in the rearview mirror. Get past it so we're not worrying about it going forward. And as a player, I'm sure he's saying he's not worrying about it right now. He's just worrying about playing. But listen, you do, because one of the important things about signing that big deal is going to be what would be health. Though we did see Dak get the big deal after getting an injury as well. But that's the big thing you hold your breath for. People in Lamar's circle or family is, man, you don't want to see a situation. You never want to see it. But when that money is on the line, which he should still get anyway, I'm with you. Take care of that thing during the bye week. But this division now, in all honesty, Mike, it's turning it in to one of the more competitive divisions. We kept talking about the NFC West, and we see Seattle, you know, falling off, obviously, without, you know, a guy like Russell Wilson. But in the AFC North, what's happening? I did the Cleveland-Denver game. I mean, Cleveland basically doesn't have anybody left. They're all injured, and they pull out a win, albeit over not a great Denver game. But – that was a game where you bring in a backup quarterback in Case Keenum, and his job is to keep your team's head above water. And that's what he helped do with Dearness Johnson, a third-string running back who goes off, you know, and has an incredible day. That's picking up the slack when you have guys injured. So they're right there as they get ready to start division play as well. So they're going to be right in the mix. So between those three teams, Baltimore, Cincinnati, and Cleveland, I think it's going to be one heck of a race for the division. And obviously, there's an extra team in the playoffs as well. So, you know, who knows where there's wild, where the wild cards, one or two, could go. Could be that division.
Well, and they're the only division right now, the AFC North, with all four teams at or above 500. And it's not going to happen anytime soon. Theoretically, it's possible. We've seen in the past when there are only two wild cards, three teams go to the playoffs in one division. In theory, you could have all four teams from one division get in now because there's three wild cards. Yeah. That would really take some bad teams in the other three divisions in your conference for it to happen.
It would.
But they're all alive right now. And the Steelers and the Browns get together this weekend, and the Browns and the Bengals get together next weekend. So there's going to be some cannibalization. There's going to be some opportunities for some of those teams to get at or below 500. But I'm stunned that the Bengals are in first place. I expected the Ravens to be good, the Browns, the Steelers. I didn't think it was going to work. They've won two in a row. Exciting division. And the weather's going to start to turn. There's going to be some fun football coming up. We're going to take a break. We are 8 days away from the trade deadline. Where do things stand on Deshaun Watson? Is it going to happen? Where is he going to go? When's it going to happen? We'll try to share with you the things that we know and the things that we're allowed to talk about, wink, wink, nod, nod, when PFT Live continues right after this.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Obviously, I pulled Sam in the game. Just felt like we needed some sort of a spark. You know, not that anything was necessarily him. I think it's all of them. Hoping PJ would go out there and, you know, make a run or do something to kind of get us going. You know, Sam will be our quarterback next week. He'll be our quarterback moving forward. But in a game like that, you know, I mean, I called a fake punt at the minus 15 or 20 yard line in the first half trying to get us going. It got, you know, we checked out of it. Champ checked out of it. But, you know, this is obviously not anywhere good enough. You know, the last thing I want to do is embarrass somebody. And I know, because I know that this is going to be the story this week. But, you know, I really believe sometimes it's just, you know, you go back to the old days before all the pressure, you know, quarterbacks would sometimes sit for a little bit and have to come back. So, Sam will define who he is. You know what I mean? Like, this is up to him.
Sam Darnold started the season beating his old team. Now he went back to his old workplace and got yanked in MetLife Stadium against the New York Giants. Benched after that 3-0 start, it has fallen apart for the Carolina Panthers. They are now 3-4. And, you know, Mike, David Tepper, the owner of the team, is obsessed with finding a franchise quarterback. And they're going to roll the dice. That's how Tepper made his money. He rolled the financial dice the right way. They rolled the dice on Teddy Bridgewater last year. didn't work out. Roll the dice this year on Sam Darnold. Through seven games, it's not working out. They're going to roll the dice on somebody else, and that somebody else, frankly, depending upon how the dice fall as it relates to what Deshaun Watson wants to do, they could end up bringing Deshaun Watson, who went to Clemson, back to the Carolinas this week. It's real. The Panthers are in on Deshaun Watson, and because Watson has the no-trade clause, ultimately, it's going to be his call whether he goes to Miami or whether he goes to Carolina. My understanding is both teams are in a ballpark now with what they would offer the Texans to get it done. It comes down to what Deshaun Watson wants. And it could turn out that David Tepper rolls the dice right into Deshaun Watson and gets that franchise quarterback that he's coveted.
You know, so both of these teams, and we talked about it at the beginning of the year, especially in Miami with Tua, you have the ability, because you're on the field, to showcase yourself and say, I'm the quarterback of the future. And then obviously Tua got hurt as well, and that's certainly not his fault. But you're also not on the field, you know. And when you came in the league, you came in damaged goods with your hip as well, and you couldn't be on the field. So that goes into the memory banks as well of how much do we have him out there. You know, we talk about that with Jimmy Garoppolo at times out in San Francisco, of this great winning record he has when he's the starting quarterback for the 49ers, but he gets hurt as well. So I think, too, I think we all understand that Tua is not going to be the future of that Miami Dolphins team. And then I didn't think it was going to be that way in Carolina as well. I mean, everybody talked about Sam Darnold as just get him away from the Jets. Get him where there's a little more talent and he'll do better. And he started doing better, but it showed what Christian McCaffrey means to that offense. That offense is just vanilla. DJ Moore is having an incredible year, don't get me wrong. But that offense loses so much without McCaffrey. And I think Sam Darnold, and it's what I said about him, and I'm an analyst. It's what I'm supposed to do. It's no dislike for anybody. I think Sam is what he was in college. He turns the ball over, and he's doing it again this year. 7 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. So he's not going to be the future for this team either. So to your point, and Deshaun Watson is – now there's everything behind it, which you're going to know certainly more than me about the workings of this, of what's going to go on. Everyone, I'm sure, is asking, why hasn't the league – you know, put him on the list, that, you know, exemption list. Well, basically because he's on, you know, paid leave right now. You know, Houston's not paying him and not playing him, so he's kind of there anyway, you know, for whatever's going to happen in the legal system with what's going on, which you can explain more of. But it is going to happen. You're going to see this guy. You may not see him on the field. You may see him traded. It's all then going to depend on where the league steps in as far as how long a suspension is going to be. We saw the Browns still sign Kareem Hunt when he had an 8-game suspension that he was going to have to ride out. We don't know what this one's going to be, but I think, as you are stating, that it is going to happen. You're going to see him on another team. Then it's going to be a function of, well, you'll actually see him on the field for another team in the near future.
Yeah, I'll go back to late August as the roster cuts were looming. August 31, everybody had to go to 53. Texans had to decide what we're going to do. We're going to have a roster spot devoted to a guy who's not playing. Well, ultimately, yes, they did. But before it got to that point, there was a lot of talk about a Dolphins trade happening then and there. And at that point, the Dolphins started calling the league to find out, hey, what happens to Deshaun Watson if we put him in a position where he wants to play? And the league won't say anything. And I'll talk more about that in a minute. But it all died down then because the Texans wanted more than what the Dolphins were willing to offer. Now the Dolphins are 1-6. Now the Panthers are 3-4. And I think that, you know, you could look at it and say, well, why do it now? Why do it now? Just wait until after the season. You know, it's the same draft picks. It's April 2022 draft picks. So just wait. Well, if you wait, you can have other teams that come to the table, that come to the conclusion that their quarterbacks need to go too. So instead of the Dolphins and the Panthers, you could have, pick a team, any team. You could have a team based upon how their season ends up, says, I got to get rid of the guy I have, and I need to get in on Deshaun Watson, and it could drive the price up. So I think there's urgency now to get him because there's no guarantee you're getting him after the season. And, Mike, it is the Dolphins as the more likely of the two teams. The Panthers would be the fallback. There's possible other teams could get involved, but that no-trade clause is very powerful. Deshaun Watson's going to pick his destination. Once you get beyond the point where the Texans are satisfied with the offer And maybe they would take a little bit less from the Panthers to get him out of the conference. I think there's value in getting him out of the conference if you can, so you don't have to deal with him. You don't have to compete with him. You don't, if you develop a playoff team in Houston, you don't have to worry about coming across him at some point on the playoff tree. There's value in getting him out of your conference altogether. But the legal issue, I think, yeah, obviously it's part of this because we don't know how it's going to play out.
Right.
There's two prongs to it. You've got the criminal cases, 10 criminal complaints, no findings yet from a grand jury, and it's going to go to a grand jury, and it all comes down to how zealous the prosecutor is. They say you can indict a ham sandwich if you want to. You also cannot indict a ham sandwich if you want to. The prosecutor's zeal or lack thereof goes a long way toward determining whether or not there are indictments. Then you got the 22 civil cases. And remember this. This is important. They almost settled them earlier this year. And the talks broke down not over money. The talks broke down on the question of whether or not the settlements would be confidential. Watson wants it all public. The lawyer for the plaintiffs, Tony Busby, wants it all to be private and confidential. It's usually the other way around. Usually the person writing the check wants it to be confidential. But the fact that they're even talking about confidentiality, Mike, that tells me that they had an idea in mind of what the number was going to be. You don't talk about other issues until you get the first one, the frontline big issue, how much is going to get paid out of the way. Then you focus on the other issues. So they could settle these cases at any time, and that would change the dynamics, I think, of this situation dramatically.
So I have two questions for you. Why the switch then? Why, as you said, it's usually the other way around. Why Deshaun's side, why do they want everything public? So for those that may want to know that, why is that?
Well, what that does, it sends a very important message because first you have to understand why the person settling the cases wants it to be confidential. They don't want it getting out to their workforce, to their customer base, to anybody else they interact with. Hey, all you got to do is make this claim and they're giving out free money. $250,000. Oh, okay. Well, oh, yeah. But yeah. I found a toenail in my Fruit Loops. Hey, $250,000. Yeah. So, and that is not to suggest that the good folks at General Mills put toenails in the Fruit Loops. It's just the first thing I happened to think of, and I really don't know why. But in this case, the insistence by Watson to make it all public sends the message to the trained eye that it isn't all that much money in the grand scheme of things, which in turn reflects on the merits. That these are nuisance, they call them nuisance value, that, you know, I'm going to spend X million dollars defending myself in 22 civil cases over the next 2 years. If I just take that money, if I take 75% of it, 50% of it, or 100% of it, and by certainty, that's better. So I think he wants it all public because, and his lawyer wants it all public because it shows to the world that at the end of the day, these claims didn't have a whole lot of merit. That's what I believe.
Okay. All right. Then the second question is right now, again, the league hasn't put him on the exempt list because basically he's not playing it on paid leave anyway. We really got the nail on that one when, again, another game I called was Houston Carolina on a Thursday night. That's when Tyrod Taylor had gotten hurt. And David Culley, when asked about Deshaun, said basically it was a one-word answer. No, you know, he's not playing. The rookie Davis Mills took over then. So if he does get traded, again, before the trade deadline next Tuesday, now he's in a new team. Now that team's going to want to know what's up. What goes on now? Do those teams, are they contacting the league and trying to find out? Or after he's traded, is the league going to have to put a number on a suspension, or will they still wait to see how things play out?
Well, and you've got two tracks for the league. You've got the possibility of a paid suspension while things continue to percolate in the legal system, and then you've got the eventual punishment that would be 6 games, 8 games is kind of what the general thought has been in league circles, although no one knows what the NFL is going to do because they don't tip their hand. They never tip their hand. They make no decisions until they have to. And that's what the Dolphins found out when they started calling the league office in late August when they're thinking about doing this trade. Hey, so what happens if we trade for a guy that's going to show up and play? Because it's not an issue with the Texans. The NFL doesn't have to make a decision. Right. He's on paid leave as a practical matter because he doesn't want to play and they don't want to play him. They don't want him getting hurt. They don't want to diminish the value of the asset that they have that they're going to be trading. Once he's traded, that's when the league has to make a decision. And they're not even going to start the process of considering a decision until it's time to do it. There's enough flexibility, Mike, under the personal conduct policy, and I won't bore you with the details, but there's enough flexibility that if they want to put him on paid leave, they can, even without criminal charges. But this becomes a PR mess for them, and let's face it, the personal conduct policy is a PR weapon or a tool or a shield, whatever you want to call it. It's there for PR. It's not there because the NFL feels compelled to have its own justice system like it's its own country. It's doing it for PR purposes. So if you put him on paid leave, you're going to hear it from people who say, how can you put the guy on paid leave when he's never been charged with a crime? How can you do that? Especially if maybe he's settled the cases too, okay? You flip it over to the other side. Well, if you don't put him on paid leave, you're going to take flack from people who say, you don't care about these very serious allegations that have been made against him, alleging sexual misconduct, anywhere from sexual harassment to sexual assault, somewhere in that range. How can you let him play with these allegations pending? So, you know, the league's going to take some heat either way, but I mentioned that possibility of the cases getting settled. The civil cases, you can't settle the criminal cases. Those are going to be determined by a grand jury and by a prosecutor. But I think if the civil cases would be resolved, that may reduce the urgency for paid leave, and then the NFL would ultimately make its decision on a suspension without pay once the dust settles on the criminal process, whenever and wherever and however that may happen.
So, again, trade deadline next Tuesday, and that, you know, years past was never really any, there was a kind of a ho-hum day, but, you know, it certainly, as the last couple of years, has been more, you know, exciting from trades. So in your eyes, will Deshaun Watson, will he be on another team before November 2nd?
I believe that it will happen this week. Barring a dramatic change in circumstances, based on what I know now, I believe it'll happen this week. And it ultimately comes down to which team he will waive the trade, the no trade clause for, whether it's the Dolphins or whether it's the Panthers. He's going to be picking his destination. It's likely the Dolphins, but let's just see what happens. And would it surprise me if it happens tomorrow? Wouldn't surprise me if it happens tomorrow. I'm not saying it will. I'm just saying it wouldn't surprise me if it happens tomorrow. That's how close it is. And look, John McClain of the Houston Chronicle put the ball on the tee last Wednesday when he said that Watson could be traded to the Dolphins this weekend. Well, it hasn't happened yet, but he may just be off by a day or two. That's the momentum that's pointing there. Before we break, though, we got to hear from Tua Tagovailoa, the guy who is the quarterback in Miami, and Brian Flores has said that twice mm-hmm. now. He is our quarterback. Conjugation is very critical in situations like this. He's never said he will be. He's never said Deshaun Watson won't be. All he said is Tua is our quarterback. Let's hear how Tua is dealing with these rumors. Here's his comments from yesterday's loss to the Falcons.
I mean, it was a normal week for me. I mean, I approach this game the same way I approach any other game. So,
but when the coaches have to sit down and talk to you about trade rumors, that doesn't necessarily seem like a normal week, even though it's kind of been consistent all season.
Yeah, I would say it still is a normal week. The only thing is, you know, I really respect and appreciate his transparency, you know, with where he's at with that. But, you know, within our conversations, I like to keep those private too. So, well, I hear it. You know, I do hear it. The thing is, I just don't listen to it. You know, that's the thing. But yeah, that's that.
And Mike, you know, this is a very cold, objective, dispassionate yeah. sport. It's results driven. You know, when you lose to a team that lost 20 games in a row, that's not going to put the fire out, right? I mean, when Tua was having, and as anyone would, you think it's your job. They just drafted you a year and a half ago, and now what do you mean, Deshaun Watson? You haven't even given me a chance yet. I came in with a bad hip, and you know, I was behind Ryan Fitzpatrick, and then I was playing, and I got benched a couple of times, although he's admitted that that's because he didn't know the offense as well as he should. But, you know, when you're wondering what the team is thinking, well, one way to deal with it is go out and play so well that they stop thinking about the other guy. And if you do, great, and if you don't, That's just how the game works. If you aren't getting it done, they're going to find somebody else that they think can.
So it has changed with the quarterbacks, the high drafted quarterbacks. And listen, it's a guy who threw four touchdowns yesterday, you know, in the loss, did throw two interceptions as well. But once the rookie Wadesdale came into play, I think the last quarterback to go number one without it was Sam Bradford, and he got about 50 mil, yes, some guaranteed. Well, these first round quarterbacks aren't making that money at this point now. You know, it's gone down considerably. So the money invested is not as much as it was. So you can do this more. You can go through a couple of years of a quarterback you took early on, you know, first rounders I'm talking about more than anything else. And you can move on them because the money hit isn't as bad as it was. But the bottom line for Tua and listening to him talk is you're a human being, right? You're a human being. And I'm glad at least he says he hears it. There are some people who said, oh, I don't even hear that stuff. Yeah, you do. Everybody hears it, and everybody will process it differently. But at the end of it all, once you hear it, once you process it, you have to look in the mirror and you have to say, I'm the only one that can control what I can do. So he's still right now the quarterback on the field. And whether it's to quarterback to try and show I can be the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins for my future, or show enough that there's another team out there, if this team is set on bringing in Deshaun Watson, that I'm good enough that another team is going to want me. That's all you can do. Hell, I tell my kids that goes from a young age all the way up to the professional ranks. All you can do is control what's in your house. You can't control what management's going to do, and you can control yourself by playing better, by playing well. And he's played well at times, but he's struggled at times. He's been inconsistent, and he's been hurt. That's not the mark that checks the box that says, yeah, he's our quarterback for the next decade.
Yeah, and the problem is, no matter how determined he is to play well, he just may not have the high-end tools that would allow him to do it. So no matter how hard he tries, no matter how determined he is to prove that they shouldn't want Deshaun Watson is better than him. It's that simple. There are some guys who are better than others in the NFL at quarterback, and that's just part of the reality of assessing your team. Now, I still don't know why they took Tua instead of Justin Herbert, but I think that's another reason why they're feeling the urgency to make the change. And you make an excellent point on how the rookie wage scale changes the approach. I mean, look at what the Cardinals did. They traded up to number 10 to take Josh Rosen in 2018 and threw him overboard after one season because they could get Kyler Murray. And that is never brought up as a mistake. You do what you have to do to get your franchise quarterback, because once you have him, you've got him for 10, 15, 20 years, unless you completely mismanage the relationship and then he wants to be traded like Deshaun Watson. Other than that, you're going to have that guy, and you're set for a generation of football. So that's why teams keep swinging the bat at trying to get a franchise quarterback, because once you get him, you are golden for a very long time, Mike.
Oh, listen, completely agree. I mean, that's what you're looking for, right? You're looking for that magical moment. You know, that's why we were scratching our heads again with Dak Prescott and Jerry Jones saying, what are you doing? You know, you got your guy here. You're signing everybody in the world before him. And finally, you know, they signed him even after he was hurt. I mean, but you look at Khalil Mack from the Raiders. You wondered why you want a guy to be as good as he was, and then you end up trading him away. I know it was a lot of money, and you have to think about the cap. But you're looking for these types of players, and then you scratch your head when you say, okay, now we're going to get rid of them. And on the other hand is you pay a lot of money early, and they're not panning out. You can discard them quicker and try and change your roster over.
That's one of the things I love about the draft. I use the metaphor all the time that basically your draft picks are unused lottery tickets and you're trying to scratch off the jackpot. And when you do get one, eventually you're the one that's got to pay the jackpot to the guy. Yeah. That's the downside. Eventually, you've got to pay that guy. Because that's what you want. You want these cornerstone players, and that's what every team wants, a franchise quarterback. And somebody's getting Deshaun Watson, I believe, this week. And barring something unexpected, something stunning, something shocking, it will be the Dolphins or the Panthers this week. Let's take a break. When we return, Sunday Night Football, and should the 49ers be sounding the alarm as it relates to their ability to get back to the postseason? We'll discuss Colts at 49ers when PFT Live continues right after this.
guess so. You know, I'm going to watch this tape and see if guys are healthy, first of all. I don't even know where our guys are at. And it was good for Jimmy to be able to get healthy enough to play in this game today. I got a whole team to worry about. I'm not just thinking about the quarterback situation right now. I'm going to evaluate everything, see where our team's at, see what gives us the best chance to beat Chicago, and see what our options are. I mean, that's what you go into each week, finding out your options. We had two quarterbacks who were hurting this week. Jimmy was able to come back and play. We'll see if Trey can next week. Still not sure yet. But I got a lot of things to figure out.
I would guess so is not the answer that you're typically accustomed to when the question is whether or not your starting quarterback will start the next game. 2-4 are the 49ers. Now, they started 2-0, and the percent the chance go to the playoffs, you start 2-0, and blah, blah. Look, they're 2-4 now. They've lost 4 in a row. I think we have to come to grips with the possibility that this team just isn't very good, isn't as good as we thought they were going to be, and the quarterback situation has a lot to do with it. They wanted to get rid of Jimmy. I'm still, Mike, maybe you can help me understand this. They decided they wanted to move on from Jimmy Garoppolo. So, they looked at all their different options, and they finally decide we're going to make this big trade. We're going to give up 3 first-round picks and a third-round pick so we can ultimately get our guy, our replacement for Jimmy G. And then the night before the draft, they try to get Aaron Rodgers, and the Packers hang up the phone on them. And then they ultimately draft a guy who needs a couple of years to get ready. So you want to get rid of Jimmy G., but then you embrace the guy that needs a couple of years to get ready, so you're going forward with Jimmy G. You got a Super Bowl-ready team, you think, but your quarterback is what's holding you back, and they're 2-4 now. So I'm not surprised by any of it. I'm just stunned that the 49ers have just kind of been they're just kind of in the dark, just trying to figure out how they're going to get themselves out of this quarterback mess that they put themselves in.
Well, I think that the biggest part of that was you want to strike while the iron is hot. And San Francisco, I agree with you. I think they had a team that could make a run. So to do that, you don't put all your eggs in a rookie basket. You just don't. So if they didn't want Garoppolo, the effort, in my opinion, should have been for a veteran quarterback and not the day before a draft for Aaron Rodgers. It should have been if you have this team that's ready to go, and if you don't want Garoppolo as your quarterback, you better bring in another veteran, a good player, to lead this team. And not have to rely on a rookie because it's just not going to happen. And then you end up losing out on the one guy you make a little bit of an effort for in Aaron Rodgers, and you draft a guy who hasn't played a whole lot in the last couple of years who could have a very high ceiling. So once the dust settled of all of that, my thought was, as you just mentioned, what they should have done but they didn't do, so the dust settled, to me it was you still got to start Jimmy Garoppolo. Because you have a really good football team right now and a quarterback who everybody keeps bringing up. Well, when he starts, he has a really good winning record, as a starting quarterback. But unfortunately, he's turning the ball over some. He's still getting nicked some. So, and once the team, and it looks more and more, like they're not going to be there as we sit and look in that division of an undefeated Cardinals and a 4-loss San Francisco team. But we have a 4-loss Seattle team that doesn't have Russell Wilson right now. But as it starts to go by the wayside, then I am all for once Trey Lance, and maybe it would have been Trey Lance's job had he not gotten hurt. He got hurt and now had to miss a game. Wouldn't shock me at all if Trey Lance is the quarterback in the next game. It's against, Chicago, so you're going against another rookie quarterback in Justin Fields. That offense is no great shakes out of Chicago right now, so maybe you put Trey back in and see if he can win that job. Because the more this team is going to be out of it, the more you do put Trey Lance in there and you do let him get his nose bloodied and his eyes watered and let him start to get those reps. But as long as the 49ers had been in it, I think you did need that veteran quarterback, something maybe they didn't go too hard after in the offseason if they didn't want Garoppolo.
I think they would have been interested in Matthew Stafford, but that was kind of, I don't want to call it an inside job, but you had Brad Holmes, who had been with the Rams, who became GM of the Lions. And it was the Stafford with Goff being kind of tucked into it to get Goff off the payroll of the Rams. But, they could have sent Garoppolo to Detroit too, and he could have been as good or slash bad of a starter as Jared Goff is for the Detroit Lions, but you don't get the extra trade boost for taking that huge guaranteed money off the books like the Lions did for Goff, because basically the Lions got a first-round pick to take Goff's contract.
Right.
But, you know, Sims knows Kyle Shanahan as well as anyone in the media does. They played college football together at Texas, and Sims says Shanahan won't talk to him now because Sims is in the media. But Sims still has impressions based on what he knows. And Sims believes when they made that trade that Mac Jones was the guy that Kyle Shanahan wanted. And Sims believes that someone talked him out of Mac Jones and over to Trey Lance. And then I think, and Sims believes, that Kyle waited and hoped that Lance would seize the job, that he would step up and play in a way that got the locker room that is firmly behind Jimmy Garoppolo to say, see you later, Jimmy, we're with this guy now. And merit will do that. If you get a guy who shows up and he's clearly better than the guy who's there, they're all going to gravitate toward the new guy if the new guy is dramatically better. But Lance has yet to declare himself, and no one expected him to because he was viewed as a guy who was going to need a couple of years. That's why none of this makes any sense. Nothing the 49ers have done at quarterback the last 5 years makes any sense, including passing on Patrick Mahomes and saying no to Tom Brady when he wanted to come home. Now we're good with Jimmy. Really? Okay, fine. Have fun with that.
Well, see, listen, I don't think there, and no doubt there were mistakes, but you know what teams do, nobody wants to admit to a mistake. Nobody wants to admit they made the wrong choice. That's why every draft pick was the correct draft pick for every team in every round, no matter what, at the time when they get asked about it. And if I find it hard to believe, Mike, that there could be the thought process that Trey Lance would come in and make you want to forget about Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, I know Jimmy Garoppolo is not the greatest quarterback, but he's not the worst quarterback either. And Trey Lance, you know, has played limited games in college, not, you know, Division One, by the way, not certainly not Power Five, and not Division One, and he hasn't played as of late. So to think a guy who may have a high ceiling, and you look at him with the whip he's got and the way he can move, it is an incredible to look at. But to think to come into the National Football League and right away show I should be the guy and I'm going to turn all the locker room guys, all the vets over to my side, that's crazy. And he may turn out to be a great quarterback, but if anybody thought that was going to happen right out of the gate, that I don't know where that thought process was coming from.
But that's what makes how they handled this so confusing. Okay, you come to the conclusion that we've got a pretty damn good team right now. As you said, right now.
Yeah.
The moment's now.
Yep.
The future's now. We got a pretty good team right now, but the guy that's holding us back is our quarterback. So what are our options? Oh, wow, Matthew Stafford. Boy, we would have liked to have been on that. Oh, crap, he's going to be with the Rams now. Well, who else is out there? And it just, you know, nothing else materialized. Again, they called the Packers about Aaron Rodgers the night before the draft, and they knew there was reason to call. They knew that there was acrimony and dysfunction, and maybe they'd make something happen. And think of how good that team would be if they had Aaron Rodgers right now instead of Jimmy Garoppolo and Trey Lance. But when you make that trade up, and you're just giving off the vibe you're looking for an immediate upgrade at quarterback. Why are you not looking for an immediate upgrade at quarterback? Why are you giving up 3 first-round picks and a 3rd-round pick for a quarterback that may make you better years from now when your window is open now? We see how these windows open and close. The window's open now. That's what's so confounding about it, Mike.
Oh, listen, I agree. You look at Cincinnati, Jacksonville, the Jets. You get what you're doing to build for the future. But, man, there are other guys in that locker room. You know, you have an obligation to those players as well. I mean, the time is now. You don't know when they're going to come about. Talk to Marino. Hell, he gets to the Super Bowl early in his career and thinks, oh, okay, we're going to get back. Never gets back again. You just don't know. So you take advantage of your opportunity. And I know some guys in that locker room have already been to a Super Bowl, so they even got a taste. So they know what it takes to get there. And when you have that team that can at least be in contention for that, you know, you got to make hay. And it does seem like in the periphery and behind the curtain that the 49ers really didn't do enough to take advantage of this year.
And you got to wonder when jobs are going to be on the line. I know when they hired Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, they gave him 6-year contracts, full guarantee, no offset, because they had that stink of dysfunction where Jim Tom Sula, they fire Jim Harbaugh, then they have Tom Sula for 1 year and he's out, Chip Kelly for 1 year and he's out. They needed some stability. But, you know, it's kind of got a little bit of that Gruden-Mayock vibe where, and before all the stuff that happened with Gruden over the past couple of weeks, it felt like Mayock was going to be the sacrificial lamb. At some point, Lynch may be out and Shanahan tries to salvage, because this notion that you've got a great team, well, yeah, they've been to a Super Bowl, but every other year they've stunk. And right now, it's amazing to think, Mike, that epic Week 17 game, the Sunday nighter between the 49ers and the Seahawks that determined the one seed in the NFC, those two teams now are 2-4 and looking up at the rest of the division. It just shows you how quickly things change in the NFL, and it shows you when that window's open, it can go from open to shut fast.
Oh, without a doubt. And listen, jobs will be on the line. Talk about GMs. You know, we always kept bringing up Gettleman as far as Daniel Jones was concerned. And you would have to do that with no matter how it went. And that's what I don't know behind the scenes of how it went. If Kyle Shanahan wanted Mac Jones and got talked out of it, who did he get talked out of it by? Was it John Lynch? How did they end up with Trey Lance? But that's who you're joined at the hip with, right? So you have to see how that develops. If Trey Lance can turn into a really good quarterback, because that's the most important position on the field, that's going to be a feather in the cap for management there for the 49ers, right? I mean, so that's what you have to wait and see. You have to wait and see when you make a pick that high, is it going to pan out for you?
And, well, we'll see how it plays out for the 49ers. But 2-4, not good, and not nearly what they thought they were going to be, especially after starting 2-0. The Colts turning it around after a disastrous start to their season. And I respect the fact, Mike, that, you know, 2 weeks ago tonight, they have that 22-3 lead against the Ravens in prime time, and the Ravens storm back and take the game in overtime. And the Colts did not feel sorry for themselves. They didn't let one loss become two, become three. They're 2-0 since then. They manhandled the Texans last Sunday, and they went into a spot last night with all the rain and all the wind and the 49ers desperate. That's the thing. They were facing a desperate team. And the Colts get another win, and they're making things interesting at 3-4 now. Now, it would be nice for them if the Titans would lose some games. It's going to be hard for the Colts to get into the postseason, but they're turning it around. And, you know, they've weathered their storm. I think every team is going to have that storm this year at some point. At least most teams will, where you have a cluster of injuries, feels like everything's going wrong. You got to weather that, and you get to the other side of it. And it feels like the Colts are getting to the other side of it, and maybe they can start to build some momentum, and they get the Titans this weekend. They get a chance to remind everyone that they're the team that before the season we thought they maybe could be.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that's what happens, you know, in the division. You get your chances and you see what you can do. But with four losses, because what you start to do, and it's probably still a little early to do that with a lot of games to go, is where is the positioning right now? Because certainly the Titans are in command of that division, but, you know, the Colts have a way to, you know, mitigate that by playing against them, you know, so that works that way. But you start to think about the wild cards and to think about better divisions like the AFC West, you know, like the AFC North, as far as other teams that could take those positions to where you may find yourself in the position, if we don't win the division, we don't make the playoffs. That is the beauty of the wild card, is we've seen wild card teams win the Super Bowl. So it was find a way to get in. Division is the first way to get in. They can't take that from you. And then you don't have to battle for the wild card. But if you don't get the division, battle for the wild card. And that could slip away as well in the next. Yeah, you got, like I said, you have time, and they have a way to make that up. But they need to make some hay for the top of that division. So great timing with now playing Tennessee. Because while Tennessee, we talked about them earlier, I was kind of like, come see, come saw on them, because it wasn't a high-flying offense. You had Derrick Henry, though I get it, but your defense wasn't great as well. I was even less, you know, enthusiastic about the Colts, you know, especially they had lost Quentin Nelson for a number of weeks, you know. They get him back, or they're, you know, off that high ankle sprain. But Wentz only throwing the one interception. Jonathan Taylor going for over 100 yards. The defense, you know, Darius Leonard causing some turnovers, blocking some passes, knocking the ball out, playing well on defense, you know. So all of a sudden, I'm still not sure about them, to be honest with you. I can see they can play well at times, but are they one of the top teams in the AFC? I don't know. They played that way last night, and when you get a quarterback that's playing better and key not turning the ball over, it's going to help your team have a chance, especially if you can create turnovers on the other side of the ball. So I can't sit here, Mike, and say I am sold on this team, but all you can do is play week to week. And you know what? Yesterday they played pretty damn well, and they have a chance right in front of them to the team they're looking up at to play them. So they have it right there in their hands for them.
And here's the key this weekend when they host the Titans, because they've already lost to them in Nashville. If the Colts lose this and fall to 3-5 and the Titans go to 6-2, that's a 3-game gap plus the head-to-head tiebreaker for the Titans. So the Colts would have to make up 4 games over the final 9. That is probably insurmountable. So then it becomes, can we win enough to get the 7th seed? That's what they would be down to. And when you look at all the other teams out there that aren't in first place in their divisions, that are jostling, it's going to be hard for the Colts to get in. And good news is they still play the Jaguars twice, and they have the Texans again. So there's some wins there. But they also have the Bills and the Buccaneers. So it's going to be a tough road for the Colts, even if they win on Sunday against the Titans. Let's go ahead and take a break. We're over just by a little bit. When we return, we will get to the superlatives coming out of Week 7 of the 2021 NFL season. More PFT Live right after this.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.